Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. Viruses, worms, Trojan horses, spam, malware. These are just a few of the cyber threats that we've seen and heard about in the movies for years. From the malevolent artificial intelligences in Terminator and The Matrix, to the mischievous exploits of teenage geniuses in the films War Games and Hackers, Hollywood has been exposing us to the potential consequences of computers used for ill purposes for a long time. But more and more these days, the fictional dangers shown in these movies are becoming a very real threat to the daily conveniences of modern society. Okay, maybe we aren't on the verge of robot apocalypse, but the technologies needed to carry out a cyber attack are proliferating worldwide, and the ease of cyber attack on many kinds of information technology infrastructure targets is increasing rather than decreasing. At a recent speech, President Obama put the situation into context.
It's long been said that the revolutions in communications and information technology have given birth to a virtual world. But make no mistake, this world, cyberspace, is a world that we depend on every single day. It's our hardware and our software, our desktops and laptops and cell phones and Blackberries that have become woven into every aspect of our lives. It's the broadband networks beneath us and the wireless signals around us, the local networks in our schools and hospitals and businesses, and the massive grids that power our nation. The classified military and intelligence networks that keep us safe, and the World Wide Web that has made us more interconnected than at any time in human history. So, cyberspace is real, and so are the risks that come with it. It's the great irony of our information age. The very technologies that empower us to create and to build also empower those who would disrupt and destroy. And this paradox, seen and unseen, is something that we experience every day.
There's a growing debate in our country about the proper policies to address our nation's cybersecurity. But the issue is just as much about how we regulate our own use of cyberspace to conduct military attacks as it is about building the capacity to defend ourselves and recover from attacks, which is essentially the topic of the National Research Council's report on technology, policy, law, and ethics regarding U.S. acquisition and use of cyber attack capabilities. But it's always a good idea to start at the beginning. So we turn to Herb Lin, Chief Scientist for the Computer Science and Telecommunications Board and Study Director for the report, to tell us exactly what a cyber attack is and what they can be used for in a military and intelligence context.
A cyber attack, the way we define it, is some action that's taken to destroy or disrupt or to degrade or damage somehow an adversary's information technology system or network. They are limited only by your imagination as to what computers can do. So you can imagine computers controlling an air defense system, for example, and you might want to attack the computers controlling the air defense system so that your fighter planes can get through without being harmed. There are many applications of cyber attack, anything where you can think of a computer controlling something that you want to disrupt or to harm. If you can attack the computer controlling it, maybe you can disrupt the function that it's supposed to be performing.
Cyber attacks differ from traditional physical attacks in several key ways. With a physical attack, the goal is to destroy something, like a tank or an electric generator. In a cyber attack, the goal is to destroy or cripple the computer that is controlling the tank or controlling the generator. So a cyber attack is essentially looking to have an indirect effect rather than a direct effect. From a legal perspective, this has some interesting implications for judging the use of cyber attack.
For example, it means that you can't say that a cyber attack is of lesser consequence just because it targets a computer or just because nobody gets killed. Because if the computer controls a generator and you kill the computer and the generator goes down and stops producing electricity and the electricity is operating, is used to operate a hospital, for example, you may kill people in the hospital, which may not be your intent.
Given that it's not as straightforward as it seems, the national academies believe that existing international laws that regulate the conduct of war, like the law of armed conflict and the UN Charter, should also apply to cyber attacks. But these laws are only a starting point. There are aspects of cyber attack that don't fit neatly within the existing legal structure.
The UN Charter is based on notions of territorial integrity, that is, nation states. What do you do with a non-state actor? What do you do with a cyber terrorist? Do you go after him? And given that the cyber terrorist, in fact, could be operating three doors down from me, okay, and so do I attack, you know, him on U.S. soil? Do all of the protections of U.S. law apply to that terrorist? Now, this is a very interesting question. And what happens if that terrorist has compromised, you know, my dad's computer and using that to conduct an attack? Are we now allowed to shoot back at my dad's computer? So those are some increasingly complicated questions. This is all a matter of law that's in the process of evolving as we speak.
Clearly, legal and moral ambiguities abound, making it that much more important that we address the unique nature of cyber attacks by having a clear national policy, not only about how to protect ourselves, but how to conduct an attack against our enemies. Yet many of the discussions about cyber attack are going on behind closed doors. Indeed, one of the main recommendations of the report is that the United States needs to have an unclassified national debate about cyber attack policy. But even within the classified community, there are steps that could be taken in order to increase transparency across government agencies that would improve the oversight and decision-making apparatus regarding the use of cyber attack.
There should be a compendium of all government cyber attacks, all cyber attacks conducted by the U.S. government, describing what was done and what the purpose of it was, and so on. This would be absolutely a classified document. There's no question about that. And it would be limited, and its distribution should be limited only to the people who really should know about that. But somewhere in the government, there should be somebody who knows all of the things that we've done in cyber attack, and not just by one division, one part of the Department of Defense, by all of the Defense Department and all of the intelligence agencies and all of law enforcement if they do this sort of stuff. Somebody should integrate all of this information and roll it up into one package and so that you have a comprehensive view of what the U.S. government is doing. And there should be some accounting of how much we're spending and on what to develop cyber attack capabilities. So maybe there's something being spent in the Air Force, and maybe there's some more being spent in the Navy, and maybe there's something more being spent in the Army, and so on and so forth. And you would want to know what all of them are doing. Now, this in principle sounds like a simple task, but the U.S. government is a very large entity, and it is very difficult to find out what everybody's doing, especially when this stuff is classified.
Some of the cyber attacks that the U.S. government would carry out could depend on private sector networks and internet service providers. This also presents some very specific problems.
What does the private sector owner of this network do if it finds out that there's an attack going on through its wires, through the wires? Okay? Does it shut it off? Does it try to shut it off? Well, it may be a U.S. company, but if they don't know that the U.S. has launched a cyber attack, then they're interfering unwittingly with an attack of the U.S. government. So how are they supposed to differentiate between an attack launched by U.S. government, which is a good guy, versus an attack launched by some random hacker, which is a bad guy, even though the traffic may look the same?
It is because of these very complex issues that the National Academies recommends a more open approach towards cyber attack policy. Because no matter how well we develop our offensive and defensive capabilities for cyber attack, if our policy for using that capability is ill-formed, we are bound to make mistakes that could have dire costs.
This is a subject that is too important to be discussed only behind closed doors. It's an issue of national importance that everybody has a stake in. People have been talking about cyber attack, but mostly behind closed doors. It's a very active subject of discussion. And there's a veil of silence.
Since the release of the NRC's report, there's been a flurry of interest in this topic. As a harbinger of better things to come, Dr. Lin is hopeful that open, national debate of the issues is soon to follow. For more information on cyber attacks, you may read the full report free online at nap.edu. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.